Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
All of the running backs are staple-gunned to the bench. Maybe Philip Rivers isn't as good as a lot of people think he is. Just good enough to get you close, but never good enough to actually win the game. It looks like a college offense. I'm not the biggest Melvin Gordon fan because this team is just poorly constructed.
Are we allowed to curse on this podcast?
Gus Bradley's defense in Los Angeles has been and continues to be a joke. And the Chargers defense has been atrocious. And shocker, he's terrible at it. I think you're overestimating the Chargers wide receiver group. Dontrell Inman is trash and doesn't belong on a roster. He has been bad this year. Like, can't get open, can't catch balls, bad. Can't put Travis Benjamin on the outside. Tyrell Williams in danger of losing his starting job because he's been really bad. Antonio Gates is really not good anymore. He can't run. He can't get open. Continue to be stupid. Tyrell Williams isn't doing it. Travis Benjamin's not that guy. I mean, they gave it to the Chargers because of pity. Travis Benjamin, all 5'7" of them. The Chargers can't run and Rivers can't throw deep. There's none. There's no home field advantage.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. You can also follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. This Thursday edition of Locked On Eagles is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Use the promo code Locked On at MyBookie.ag. As always, I am here with my co-host Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K, Ben. How you doing, brother?
Oh, every day is a good day. It's a great day to be alive, my man. I'm not going to lie. I've got the blooper reel stuck in my head a little bit. I don't want to start laughing.
I saw you smile there, and I was like, what's going on in Ben's head right now? Because I almost started cracking up. Guys, if you didn't hear it yesterday, I played at the end of the show, after the end Fly Eagles Fly, I played a two-minute clip from the previous recording where I was trying to finish the show and just could not get it done. It was bad.
It's a good lesson.
So hopefully we will be able to avoid the giggles today. And we are going to talk about a couple of things. First, we're going to check in on our over-under prop bets from the preseason. And then we are going to do pick a prospect. So without further ado, let me pull up the prop bets here that Ben had on his Twitter timeline. If you want to see these and see how the Eagles faithful voted, we'll probably talk about it too. But at Benjamin Solak, man, just type in the hashtag Locked On Eagles. You'll be able to find it. So first over under, Carson Wentz passing attempts 550. Ben, how did you have that?
Right, so I had that as the over, you had that as the over, the polls had that as the over. We talked about how desperately we wanted it to be the under, but predicted it would be the over. And lo and behold, Carson Wentz is averaging just under 40 attempts per game. He's at 39 per game right now, on pace for 624 over the season, which would be the second most all time for a second year quarterback. So it's gonna be the over. Okay, at 550, if he were to try to hit 550, he would have to average 33 attempts per game from here on out for the next 13 games. Do we think there's a chance of that happening?
I'm going to go with no.
Yeah, strong no.
We nailed it on that one. I can already pretty much call that, dude. It's not even, yeah. I mean, what are we really talking about here? So we'll go to the next one. Over under Carson Wentz interceptions 18. Ben, what did the people say? What did we say?
Right, so both you and the people were under. I went over, and if you go back and listen, believe me, the reason I went over is because I said that, you know, on his rookie tape, there were a ton of passes Carson Wentz threw that could have been intercepted and weren't. They, like, hit defenders in the hands, and defenders weren't able to pull them in, which is funny because he's only got 2 interceptions so far this year, on pace for about 11 over the year, which would be a drop from last year. But as you well know, we had the big hullabaloo about interceptable passes with Carson Wentz. So it's not like the storyline has died. It's not as if these issues are gone. It's really the same saving grace of last season is here for Carson this season. Now, it's also important to remember that at this point in the season last season, Carson Wentz was on a no interception streak, right? He was three games in, had no picks, and then you know, we had the final pick, Darius Slay there against the Lions. And that was the first one, but he was looking real good in that regard. And so two numbers, even though he more so was on pace for 11, which is lower than his 14 of his rookie season, he's technically ahead of the curve as he was last year.
Right, yeah, and like you said, man, some of those interceptable, it's... Don't hope that he goes on a bad streak where some of those are picked off more often than not, because he's been fairly lucky so far. Mm-hmm. Still calling you a hater, Ben, for that. All right.
I just thought maybe I'm overestimating the hands of NFL defenders. Who is it that always, you know, used to say, oh, that's why they play defense, because they can't catch, like John Madden or some other old dude, right, you know, who is commentating. They keep dropping interceptions. And obviously I love it when I'm watching the game, but when we get to this particular prop bet, I get very frustrated.
See, you're putting your own selfish needs over the team, and you would never be a Carson Wentz ideal teammate.
No, sir. Carson Wentz, who donated the Jake Elliott check to charity. Unbelievable.
All right, so next one was over under Brandon Graham sacks. I believe I definitely had the over on that one. Is that correct?
Yeah.
It was 7.5 was the over under. I think everyone went with the over. Did you go with the over?
Yeah, we all went over. Me, you, Poles, everybody. I mean, right now he's at 2.5, and that puts him on pace for 13, which would be a clear career high for Brandon Graham, obviously. I'm curious in your thoughts on this, though, because 2.5 sacks, 1.5 came against the Chiefs, Alex Smith. The other two were both garbage time sacks against the Redskins, right? Less than 2 minutes in the game, a two-score lead on both sacks. And how much does that... Because I know Justice Mosqueda, who does some work for Bleacher Report, he follows edge rushers a lot, has been doing work recently on which edge rushers get sacks within one-score games and who gets sacks in garbage time and kind of how that influences their numbers. How much does that impact how you view Brandon Graham's production so far this year?
Yeah, honestly, I would say not a whole lot, because he's been a physical presence on that line. He's getting pressures. He's making plays in the backfield in non-garbage time as well. I just think it's worked out that way. So let's say, you know, maybe he gets 12 sacks this year. Maybe five of them are in garbage time, and you end up with 7 sacks that, you know, are what you would consider cleaner sacks, I guess. Mm-hmm. That lineman's not laying down for him just because it's garbage time. They're trying to score two and put on good tape. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week, whether it's Steelers against Patriots or Bears against the Lions. Well, let me tell you this. Where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on, and that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing, and they have the fastest payout. Seriously, it's just two business days. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 100% bonus. Use promo code LOEagles, that's LOEagles, to activate your offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. I don't put a whole lot of stock in that. What about you?
See, here's my thing. I don't want to put stock in it, but then I watch how much more willing Jim Schwartz is to bring blitzes on obvious pass rush situations. And I watch the stellar start of the season that you've seen from everybody else on that line. And I start to wonder to myself, you know, if defenses are still keying on Brandon Graham as that primary edge rusher that they want to chip, which I think that they are, will there be enough left at the table for him to reach this number, assuming that, you know, he doesn't always get into situations like he was in Washington, where he knows they're going to throw the football and he has no reason to fear any sort of run. And a sack, as we saw with Washington, because the first sack was the strip sack, a sack in that situation practically ends the football game, right? If you're in a 2-minute drill and you need two scores like that, one defender gets one sack, you can basically call it game, because that's such a difficult obstacle to surmount. So I'm a little tepid on it.
I think that actually kind of plays into what we have next, which is the over-under for Derek Barnett sacks, which I believe... How did we have that? It was at 4.5. He doesn't... Does he have any this year? I don't believe
he has zero, and you went for the over. Poles went for the over. I went for the under.
Which is weird because I wasn't the biggest Derek Barnett guy coming into the draft
right. For
me to go on the over. I thought he was going to see some more meaningful snaps in that area. Vinnie Curry has played well enough to earn some snaps. I think after preseason, we all thought this is going to be the Derek Barnett show on third down, and it hasn't really panned out that way yet. I mean, there's a lot of season left and whatnot, and I'm not saying that Derek Barnett has played poorly necessarily. I mean, he's struggled at times, but he's also, you know, a rookie as well. People just think these guys are going to come out of college and be sack masters, and it's just not the case. And you can point to examples like Danelle Hunter, you can point at Vic Beasley, guys that kind of bloom after that first season. So moving on, anything you wanted to add on that note, Ben?
Yeah, I think the Barnett zero sacks, only three tackles over three games speaks more to Vinnie Curry playing well than it does Barnett playing poorly. And that's not only, you know, an increase in Vinnie Curry's sack numbers, but also still viewing that defensive line as a unit, as we did with Brandon Graham. That means there's more first team reps for Curry and more second team reps for Barnett. And just, you know, plainly, you've got harder work to do when you're rushing with the second team, because they're not going to be as worried about Elijah Qualls and Bo Allen and Chris Long as they would be if it was Jernigan Cox and Brandon Graham lining up next to you. So I think it's more about the Curry storyline. So it's not like we're at a loss there. You know what I mean? The Eagles are still generating pressure. Curry's playing great. So good news for the team. Just Barnett isn't putting up the numbers.
Right. Yeah, not too concerned with it as we move forward. The next one is kind of weird.
I think, yeah, this one's interesting, I think.
That the over-under for Sidney Jones' games played this year is at 4. Ben, has there been any development in his recovery from the Achilles tendon tear?
I mean, given the slew of injuries the Eagles have had over the past couple of weeks, there's really been very few updates on Sidney Jones as far as what's coming out of training camp, how he looks, where his health is at. I remember when we did this section, you know, 68% of the voters said under on 4 games played by Sidney Jones. And I remember when we spoke about this, I said, I think there's a better than 32% chance that he sees the field when he comes back off the NFI list. And I'd be willing to say right now, I think that number is even further increased. I think we're getting close to a range where this Eagles defense, when it gets back healthy, and given the place they are right now, which looks to be the early driver's seat of the NFC East, you might be at a place where the only perceivable weakness on this team is CB2, as far as defense. Only perceivable weakness on this defense is CB2. And if you're at that point, and you have a Sidney Jones who is healthy, I don't see why you don't activate him and you don't give him looks. He's your second round pick from this year, right? A lot of the thought as to him not playing this year was simply saying, okay, we don't think, you know, necessarily we're going to be in too competitive of a place where we want to rush a rookie back from injury, right? If there's no chance of us making the playoffs or going deep into the playoffs, why risk re-injury? Why bring him back quickly? But I mean, right now, with the way that you've seen Michael Kendrick step up his play, with how well Tommy Jernigan has fit, with Vinnie Curry's resurgence, this is a defense that's got 9.5 pieces, right? And I mean, I would love to say that, you know, because Rasul Douglas is my boy, that if he keeps playing like this, that he should continue to see outside reps. But I think if you have a healthy Sidney Jones, even if Rasul's playing well, I still think you're going to want to see what you have there with Sidney. Because if he plays as well as the first round pick he was touted to be, this is a very complete defense.
I got to agree there. If you're starting to look like you're making a playoff run and you're confident in Sidney Jones being healthy when he returns, then, I mean, you almost kind of have to be honest. I don't want to rush him back, but I mean, if he's healthy, go for it, man.
And you can bring him, you know, you can activate him off the NFI list. You can bring him in. You can see if he's there. You can see if the quickness is where you want it to be. And if it's not, then you healthy scratch him. And okay, you lost a spot on the 53, and that's rough, absolutely. But if there's a potential to really kind of, you know, put the final piece in place, I don't think Sidney Jones would be a top-tier defender on this defense in his first year. But to put that final piece in place on what looks to be a fantastic unit early in the year that might take you deep into the playoffs, you got to do it. You got to do it.
So the next two kind of tie in with each other. Alshon Jeffrey over under games played. We have that at 13 games, if I'm not mistaken. And then over under for yards this season at 1,000. So far, he's been healthy. Some slight knocks, nothing major at all. I think the over one on that, is that correct?
Yeah. Everybody went over for games played 13, and no reason to believe otherwise as far as right now.
So right now he is on pace for 992 receiving yards based on what he's done in these past two games.
There.
And our over-under for receiving yards for the year was 1,000. I believe I went with the over. Is that correct?
Yeah, we all went over on 1,000 yards. There was that funny little discrepancy where, you know, like 45% of people said that he was not going to play more than 13 games, and then 67% said that he was still going to get over 1,000 yards, which meant 22% of the people thought that he was going to play only 12 games and get 1,000 yards, which is silly.
Madness.
But as far as right now goes, yeah, I mean, averaging 62 yards per game, that gives him 992 yards. What's really interesting here is that Alshon's broken 1,000 yards two times in his career. Both times were the only two seasons where he was able to play a full 16 games, in 2013 and 2014. His yards per reception those seasons, in 2013 was really his breakout year, you know, 1,420 yards. He had 16 yards per catch. That next year, where defenses started to get a little bit wiser to him, you know, he was a full-time starter in Chicago, 85 receptions, 1,133 yards, 13.3 yards per catch, which is the lowest over his career. Right now, he's averaging 13.3 yards per catch over three games, right? So he's not seeing the big plays that he's accustomed to seeing over his career, but he's also shown that he can be enough of a high-volume target to break 1,000 without having a high yards per catch number. So because we don't seem to have that deep ball dialed in yet with Carson Wentz, and you know we have to see if that develops over time, the only way he breaks 1,000 is if he keeps getting fed the football. That's how it has to happen.
And on the last time that we talked about this, I pointed out that Alshon, over 16 games for his career, averages 77 receptions, 1,155 yards, and 6.6 touchdowns. So I think the potential is definitely there. Wentz missed him a couple times. Let's call it what it is. So it's not necessarily Alshon's fault that that deep ball production hasn't been there yet. He's been somewhat available. It's not, you know, he's not a deep burner, but you can throw it up to him at times. So
right.
Okay, we will table that discussion and we will revisit this later on in the season, probably around the midway point. I think would be a good time for it. What we're gonna do is we're gonna go right into our pick a prospect because it's always April in Philadelphia. And
yes, sir.
Ben, I'll give you first crack at it. Who you got?
You wouldn't. How sweet of you. I'm tempted for my peek at a prospect this week to go for Saquon Barkley because I watched him against Iowa and I lost his mind.
He's not going to be there.
On the last pod. But yeah, we have to admit to ourselves that he's not going to be there at this point, which is rough. So I'm going to talk about a guy that I know I went offensive lineman earlier with Mike McGlinchey, but I want to go for another guy out of Georgia, Isaiah Wynn. All right, and Isaiah Wynn played some left guard predominantly for Georgia in the beginning part of his career there, but now he's over at left tackle, and he definitely is undersized for left tackle, and I don't think he's the solution at tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't. I think that he probably translates best to a guard at the next level who can play tackle in a pinch if you need to, which will sound familiar to Philadelphia Eagle fans because we used to have a lot of players like that and have since moved on from them. But Isaiah Wynn, really nice footwork, and he's a great mover in space. He reminds me a little bit of Jason Kelsey, in the sense that he's not the biggest guy, but he has got a good hit rate in space. He looks real good on the hoof, and that's nice. He can mirror really well too on the interior and on the edge, you know, keeping track with these quick twitch pass rushers. Hands are good, not great, and then obviously he tends to lose to power a little bit, and he's susceptible to the bull rush. He's a guy that'll probably be around on day two, so your round two and your round three. The Eagles have shown now, you know, after they drafted Wentz, they immediately drafted Isaac Samuelo and Halapalavati Vaitai afterwards. So they want to get young bodies on this line to be with Wentz for a period of time. I think Isaiah Wynn can do really well to bolster a guard group that may be an interior line group, I should say, that may be losing Jason Kelsey, Chance Warmack, and Wisniewski, all of the potential to be gone kind of this year. We don't really know how this coaching staff feels about Saumalo right now, so there's questions to be answered there, and then can also fill in as a tackle potential because we know the depth there is questionable. Isaiah Wynn out of Georgia, good player.
I like it, man. But as we've talked about several times, offensive tackle was a sneaky need. Jason Peters is starting to wear down a little bit. I wish he could play forever, but offensive tackle is definitely one position I'll be looking at closely coming into the draft. Okay. Speaking of positions that are in need, look, man, I talked about a running back last time with John Kelly from Tennessee. I want to talk about another running back.
We are so unoriginal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, so let's see if you can guess it. There is another running back in that Penn State-Iowa game.
Oh, no. Okay, we got to – no, I don't – I'm not the biggest Akram Wadley guy. I'm just not.
No, I would never would have gathered that. Why not?
Okay, well, sell me. No, you sell me.
Oh, here we go. Is it based off last year's tape? I'm gonna ask that, or the size, or the size speed combination, size speed power. Is it because of that, or is there other factors in that?
He gives me that vibe of that player who, you know, if you just take, you know, an 8-play cross section of his career, you're gonna have like a 0-yard gain, a 0-yard gain, a 2-yard loss, a 3-yard gain, a 3-yard gain, a 2-yard gain, a 1-yard gain, and a 75-yard touchdown. And as exciting as that sort of a player can be, and I talk about this constantly, and I guess this is more my school of thought, you know. I didn't like Marlon Mack at a USF last year for the same reasons.
And neither did I, yeah.
Right. I want a running back who can consistently generate 4-yard plays for me. And I mean, watching Wadley, he doesn't deal with penetration in the backfield super well. He's not the most instinctive runner, so that's why I dislike him. But instead of doom and gloom, give the Philadelphia fans reason to get excited when we inevitably draft Akram Wadley next year.
Akram Wadley last year was a smallish guy, and that's why I asked you about if it was the size, speed, you know, power combination mm-hmm. with him that kind of put you off. Because in the offseason, this guy's coach came to him and said, look, the more pounds you put on, the more carries you get. And he kind of went under this physical transformation where it looked like last year he played around 170, 175, which is not enticing to me for a running back. And I'm sure it wouldn't be for Eagles fans after going through this whole Danelle Pumphrey thing. So, but look, he looks really like a lot stronger now. He looks like he's about over 190, probably about 195, and that's about as comfortable as I could get with him without probably losing some of his straight line speed. I like his burst. You mentioned Marlon Mack, and I believe there's a little bit of that to his game, but I think Marlon Mack was way more irresponsible.
No, I agree with that.
Trying to bounce everything. Yeah, so there's that part of it too. He contributes in the passing game. There was a snap that impressed me more than the touchdown that he had on the next play. He was in shotgun to the right of the quarterback. There was a nickel blitz that came late. Wadley diagnoses it, crosses the formation, know that he's going to be unblocked, and then sets up like he's with good depth, sets up like he's about to engage with his hands, and he just hits a nasty cut to the outside thigh of the nickel corner. It was a beautifully timed block, well diagnosed. The mental processing was there, and the dude is absolutely clutch, man. I've seen him time after time come through in big time situations.
That's because, like, Iowa doesn't have any other playmakers. He's clutch by default.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call Iowa the most clutch school anyway, so any kind of clutch there is a positive. That's a good point, though. So with his added weight, I think he can hold up a lot better in the NFL. I was kind of worried about that coming into it. I like his lateral agility. I do not buy the LeSean McCoy comparisons that some people have been throwing around. He doesn't move like that laterally. He moves well laterally, but it's not to that extent. So I just think that with this running back class, you could get RB13, and you could possibly have a guy that's going to tote the ball for you 20 times a game. I mean, you know this class. Do you agree or disagree with that?
No, I agree. And that's been one of the funny things, is this trope of like, historic running back class of 2017, the Eagles came away with Danelle Pumphrey. It's not a historic running class, because the 2018 class surpasses it. And kind of once Nick Chubb and Royce Freeman both elected to return to school this year, we got the feelings last year that 2018 would be the superior class. Me personally, here's what I want. I want the Eagles to draft Dark Horse Heisman candidate Rashad Penny out of, San Diego State, which, for those of you playing at home, is Danelle Pumphrey's alma mater. Penny is a great running back, and he always has been, and we kind of knew this last year, but Pumphrey was getting so many of the carries because he was such a great collegiate running back and can still be a good NFL running back. But Penny has, you know, not in the same mold as Pumphrey, a lot larger of a frame, you know, more of a pro-style runner, you know, can definitely lay the wood and everything. That's who I want the Eagles to draft, just for, like, the insanity of drafting the San Diego State backfield again and just freaking out the entire fan base.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah, I have to see more of Penny from what everything I've heard, and I've seen some clips, man. He looks excellent, bro. Like, people are putting him in, like, their top five or, like, their big-time sleeper right now. So I gotta check him out. There's so many running backs in this class. It's going to be so much fun in the offseason breaking them all down. So, Ben, anything else for why don't you tell the gentle listeners what we got going on for tomorrow?
the gentle listeners. Right, so Friday pod, as always, is the preview pod, looking at this Chargers game. Is it a trap game or not? You know, some folks are saying that it might be for Philadelphia, so we'll take a look. Special guest for this Friday pod is Brandon Lee Gowton of Bleeding Green Nation. Oh, chill out. You already knew that, silly. BLG is joining us, my boss over at Bleeding Green Nation. You know, one of the common hosts at BGN Radio, great Twitter follow, the absolute man. And so he'll have a lot to tell us about the Chargers and what we can expect moving forward. Obviously, we've got, you know, the health of Fletcher Cox and Jason Kelce and Jordan Hicks all to follow. You know, having Hicks practice this, Hicks practice today, Cox and Kelce both didn't. And, you know, more storylines there going into week four, like who's going to be our starting left guard? Because for some reason, we still don't know. And so looking forward to that on Friday. Should be a good one.
Yeah, we will talk about all of that with BLG. I am excited, man. I'm a longtime listener of Bleeding Green Nation and reader as well, so I'm excited to have him on. This edition of Locked On Eagles was brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Get into all the action with MyBookie.ag, where they will match your deposit up to 100% bonus. Use the promo code Locked On. All right, to listen to our Eagles Chargers preview with BLG tomorrow, you got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst. Catalyst.